I'll be honest, I'm not interested in recording this episode at all.
I think we should just do Tenet and just fuck it.
This episode. Well, I spent time and money watching the other fucking movies, so I'm going to fucking talk about
them. We got to do that.
Welcome to Super Movie Brothers. Let's start the show.
Super Movie Brothers. I'm your host, Super Movie Brother Dave.
I'm your host, Super Movie Brother Jay.
And this week, we got a review-a-palooza. Me and Jay got three films that we're going to be reviewing. We're going to be reviewing Bill and Ted, Face the Music.
Excellent!
The Death Adder from 20th Century Fox in the X-Men franchise, The New Mutants, and Christopher Nolan's much-awaited film, the one that Jay's been waiting for so long, and it was delayed and then delayed and then delayed again, but it's finally got its release. So we're going to be doing our review for Tenet. Now, Tenet, we're going to do our brief review and just kind of talk about the film without spoiling it, and then we'll get into spoilers on Tenet. But before we do any of that, let's get into what are you watching?
What are you watching?
What are we watching?
He's trying to watch some illegal channel.
Oh, ain't watching.
No, go past this. Past this part. In fact, never play this again.
All right, Jay, what'd you get down to watching this week?
Oh, boy, Dave. Well, I was able to watch a couple different things that came out earlier this year in 2020, both streaming on Amazon Prime. One is called Arkansas, and the other is Capone. I will first dive into Arkansas a little bit. So this one was written and directed by Clark Duke. He's been like an actor and mainly a few things here and there. Hot Tub Time Machine, you know, stuff like that. Sex Drive was a big one.
Sex Drive is the one I remember him most fondly from.
But this is his first feature film, and he was able to, you know, pull together a decent little cast. I mean, you got yourself Liam Hemsworth playing the star opposite him, and you got John Malkovich playing a baddie, and Vince Vaughn playing a baddie, and Vivica Fox playing a character in here too.
I just remembered the first time I saw Clark Duke. It was in Superbad, and he's the one that points to Fogel and goes, "Fogel's a badass."
He just has that likable, weird, quirky charm, you know, when you look at him.
If you see him now, though, like
he looks weird right now.
Yeah, his
in this
long
movie
hair,
too.
His mustache, it's just like, that's not working for you. But you know what?
Yeah.
You rock it. That's fine.
That's what he pretty much had in the movie, I think. and, you know, honestly, this is it has a lot of inspiration from Pulp Fiction, I would say. And, you know, if this is a kind of like a dark dramedy, obviously it's just kind of like a weird movie in Arkansas, small timers, drugs, people getting into weird shenanigans, how they got into the business, how they're trying to get out of the business. You know, it's awkward situations arise. What do they do next? You know, weird, quirky character moments like that. And ultimately, it is a fun breeze of a movie to kind of just sit back and enjoy, you know, from afar. There's nothing special about it. However, it is, I give him a lot of credit for kind of swinging for the fences to make himself his own, you know, through and through drama that I think he wanted to really take, you know, the time and be proudful of, you know, and I think he should be. I mean, this is a decent entry feature film, and I really enjoyed all the performances, and I thought it was a lot of fun to watch. It was much more fun than Capone, because Capone was a movie that should have been badass when you come to think of it. Tom Hardy playing the infamous Fonzie Capone.
I'm sorry, how did you get Fonzie from Capone?
Please rise. Now sit on it. The Fonz be with you.
And also with you.
Let us A.
Al Capone, baby. Was that like a nickname of his or no?
No, Fonzie was from the fucking Happy Days. He walked in, hit a jukebox, and A.
The Fonz.
Yeah,
the Fonz.
You're getting me.
Oh, you know what it was? I don't know why this was on IMDb. They have that name underneath Tom Hardy. Why did I think that was like a nickname or something like that? I don't know.
I just realized why he's called Fonz. Because his name is Alphonse.
Ah, thank you.
Yeah. Al was short for Alphonse.
I knew it had something to do with him. I just couldn't.
It just puts a weird image in my head. Hey. just old age Al Capone walking in. Hey. Hey, Al, the jukebox stopped working over at the VFW. Oh. Hey. Anyway,
I kind of like to watch that now. Actually.
Yeah, right, it's the better version of, that Josh Trank should have done.
So this was written and directed by Josh Trank, the infamous shithead behind Fantastic Four, the 2015 flop. Now he has done Chronicle, and we all do appreciate that film. But other than that, he hasn't done anything good, and this continues that trend. This is a very indulgent, pointless film of his, you know, later, I would say, few years of life with syphilis, losing his mind in Miami in his monster mansion with all these servants and all these henchmen and all those family members living with him on the compound, and him just mumbling and chewing on cigars and carrot sticks and pissing himself and shitting himself.
If peeing your pants is cool, consider me Miles Davis.
I mean, look, let's face it. Everything from this was Josh Trank's chance.
I thought it was a redemption film for him
because
to do.
He blamed the studio so much for Fan Four Stick and talked about how it was all their involvement and stuff that ruined that movie, and his vision was completely lost and never made it to the screen and everything like that. But
it's just ultimately turns boring. Yeah, it's a premise that sounds intriguing on paper,
right?
You know, obviously, how can you not sell this film, right? You go to anyone in Hollywood, Al Capone movie starring Tom Hardy, come on, like that will sell. Now, obviously,
and it did because it got made.
It did, and it did not translate on screen, everybody, because it just becomes a self-indulgent bore. And you can tell Tom Hardy is hamming it up and having a good time with it. But what can you do when there's nothing going on in the movie but watching him just die and lose his mind? And it's just, it doesn't, you know, translate the screen as anything interesting story-wise or even as far as character and watching a performance.
So Tom Hardy performance in Capone or Tom Hardy performance in Venom? Which do you take? You can only take one. Which one do you prefer?
I would rather watch Venom.
Yeah, me too.
Venom's
more fun than people gave it credit for. It's cringeworthy moments wind up just becoming a laugh riot after several watches where you're just like,
And he was so pretty.
That was
pretty boy Tom Hardy just having a good old time in the theater. Not in the theater, but you know, making a movie.
So what I got down to watching this week, I did watch a movie. This is a Hulu original movie. It's called The Binge. So there is a ban on drinking and alcohol, and it totally steals the premise from The Purge. So where all crime is legal on one day of the year in The Binge, all drugs and alcohol are legal one day of the year. And
I was close to watching this, Dave.
It follows just a group of high school students who are trying to simultaneously get laid and get the most fucking blottoed they've ever been in their life.
My name is Otto. I love to get blotto.
It's fun. It's a musical too. Like there's musical numbers throughout it, and it never once took itself seriously, and it never once apologized for how outlandish it is. And there's something refreshing about that. And we'll get into that, a little bit when we talk about Bill and Ted. But there's something refreshing about it. But it's nothing fantastic. If it wasn't free on Hulu, then I probably never would have seen it. But because it was there and I had the time, I watched it. And I had a good time. I didn't love anything. I didn't hate what I was watching either. It was just a great way to waste time on a rainy, I think it was Sunday. No, a rainy Saturday afternoon. So I guess I slightly recommend it if you're a Hulu subscriber. Check it out.
Nice.
And then other than that, I've been getting into The Boys again.
This is like a scene in The Matrix. Now, you could take the fucking red pill, right? Spend the rest of your life jacking off, crying into your chai tea, green latte, what the fuck? Or you could take the blue pill. Or is it the red pill anyway? Take the other pill and quit being a cunt.
Which pill do you want me to take?
Just quit being a cunt. That's what I'm saying.
So me and Lauren went back and we rewatched the entire first season of The Boys, which is super easy to do. It's 8 episodes. So I think it took us like one or two nights. And we finished the entire first season, getting amped up for that season 2, which premieres the weekend you guys are hearing this. It's out. So I'm absolutely excited for that. I hadn't watched the trailer for The Boys season 2. I know I saw like the teaser trailer and stuff a couple months ago, but I just watched the full trailer like after The Boys first season was done. It immediately just started playing the 2-minute long trailer, and I don't think I've ever been more excited for anything that Amazon Prime has ever done, more so than I am for The Boys season 2. I cannot wait for it. Like, the trailer already had me in stitches. So whatever they got planned,
can't wait.
Right? Whatever
can't
they got wait. Planned for the whole second season, I just cannot wait. So we'll probably have a review of that next week. But with that, Jay, there really is no news to discuss this week. So
no, I think next week we'll probably have a trailer park. There'll be some things coming out, I think, later on.
The only news that we got so far is when you and I were in the theater to see Tenet, we got some trailers. You know, one interesting thing was that Wonder Woman, me and you were waiting for a date to appear at the end of that trailer, and it didn't happen. There was no date. It still does not have a release date. But we got the Black Widow trailer, and we found out that has now been pushed to November 6th, but it is getting a 2020 release. But we also,
and they had a release date on it. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And but we also got the Kingsman trailer as well, and that has been pushed to 2021 now.
Yes. So I'm still cautiously optimistic about that film. I think it's one of those things I'm going to either really like a lot and enjoy, or I'm not. I still am having a difficult time understanding if that kind of action in particular is going to translate well, being in that time frame, you know, in that 17th century. Who knows? I mean, it's old. I mean, not that old probably, but it's like an 18th century, 19th century type of.
Jake, I don't know if you noticed, it's World War I.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the early 20th century. So
fat, drunk, and stupid is no way to go through life, son.
Let's head over and let's get into our first review for Bill and Ted Face the Music.
If it isn't the Wild Stallions.
Bill, Ted, enough of the delusions. You didn't time travel and you didn't go to heaven and hell. Here's a real idea for you. Be role models to your daughters. Get real jobs.
We've spent our whole life trying to unite the world.
And I'm tired, dude.
Ted, we have a destiny to fulfill.
Whoa. Greetings, my excellent friend. We have a problem.
Step forward. A song created by Preston Logan, performed tonight, will save reality as we know it.
Dude, we better write that song now.
Or why can't we just go to the future when we have written it?
And take it from ourselves.
Except, won't that be stealing?
Cheers!
How is that stealing if we're stealing it from ourselves, dude?
Be excellent to each other.
And party on, dudes.
All right, first up in our review-a-palooza is Bill and Ted Face the Music. Years after Bill S. Preston Esquire and Theodore Ted Logan were destined to write the song that would unite humanity and harmonize time itself, they find themselves as delusional middle-aged failures still beating their heads against the same brick wall in their attempts to fulfill their prophecy and become true rock legends. If only they could get out of their own way. Literally. Now Bill and Ted learn that the zero hour is upon all space and time, and they have the runtime of this film to create the song that will unite the world. And it sounds like a Bill and Ted plot, you know?
Sure.
So Bill and Ted set off to traverse time and space to steal the song that unites the world from themselves. And this is how they wind up getting in their own way. Literally, their own foils are themselves in other timelines and alternate dimensions. They get up to wacky shenanigans like it's 1991 again, and they don't miss a beat. If it wasn't for the crow's feet around Alex Winters and Keanu Reeves' eyes, you'd never know that this sequel is coming 29 years after the release of their bogus journey.
Wow.
The lovable Lackwits bumble their way through this adventure with lots of humor, a few touching moments, and some fan service to those that have loved having an excellent adventure with these two. The greatest aspect of this movie is that it asks nothing from you as the viewer. It simply presents itself earnestly and wants you to root for Bill and Ted because you can't help but love them and the absurdity of it all. It's a let's get the band back together type of movie that doesn't force you to remember every detail of its predecessors, but has just enough in-jokes from the previous films to give you as a fan a good chuckle. Bill and Ted Face the Music is a familiar formula of nonsensical characters and plot that is a welcome respite from our current tumultuous world. It's far from perfect, but it's chock full of charm and hilarity, and its minor flaws are easily overlooked. I can't help but like get a smile on my face while I was watching it, because I thought from all those early images that we were getting, Jay, that like, can Keanu Reeves pull this off, right? Like, he looks weird without the beard.
He does look a little weird. Right. I know.
And, but
we haven't
like,
seen him shaved like that in a very long time, and it's a little jarring. Maybe they have a little extra makeup on him, or maybe just, you know, needs to get some sun. He looks just very pale.
But in the movie, once you get reintroduced to these characters from the very first moment of it, you're not watching Keanu Reeves. You know, you're watching Ted Theodore Logan. So it becomes a non-issue right off the bat. They slide so effortlessly back into the role. There's also like a subplot that's going on through the film. Actually, there's two other subplots. While Bill and Ted are, you know, traversing time and space, you know, trying to steal the song that would unite the world from their future versions of themselves, their wives are also traversing time and space, traveling with the older version of themselves to find a time when life is better for them with Bill and Ted, and to remind them why they love them. So like there's also like this divorce aspect running through it as well. I think all the things you would be afraid of in your middle age. I'm a failure. I haven't fulfilled what I wanted to or what I set out to do. And the other aspect of that is I'm failing my family. I'm failing my wife. I'm failing, you know, at everything else. And now they have to decide how to move forward with their lives, either with me or without me. And that's something that fits so well, but they do it so effortlessly here that it's not even something that you think about while you're watching it. It's just after you've watched it and you reflect on it, then you're like, oh, you know, I kind of see what they did there. This really is Bill and Ted 30 years later. I think my only big problem with the movie comes from Samara Weaving, who plays Thea. So she is the daughter of Bill. And I find it funny that her name is Theodora. So Bill named his daughter after Ted. And Ted's daughter is played by Bridget Lundy Payne. And her name is Billy. So he named his daughter after Bill.
Beautiful.
But while they are, you know, the female clones of Bill and Ted, for them, it's not as effortless as it is for Keanu Reeves and for Alex Winters. Like it just.
So you're saying that they're trying to act like
100%
like they are, their fathers, as far
they
as like
are
how
their
they,
fathers
they talk.
They oh. are their fathers oh. is what it comes down to.
Yeah, that's hard to do. I mean,
it's hard to do.
I guess right. It's hard. I mean, it depends on the actor. Maybe they just chose the wrong actor. Maybe they just
no. I don't think so. I think the problem is like.
So are you saying that they try too hard, and you can just tell? You can just tell that they're trying too hard and it doesn't come naturally.
I would say that, yeah. Okay. Let's go with that. I'm just saying it doesn't work as well. I think it would have worked better if you gave them some minor differences from their fathers. You know, let them have the absurd adventure, but maybe don't make them so lack-witted and you know, and foolish, I guess you could say.
have a couple different traits, you know, sprinkled
in. Yeah, give them something different other than just the female clones of their fathers. Now, by the time you get to the end of the film, they have a whole lot to do, and it almost redeems their characters in a way. But throughout the earlier parts of the movie, it is a little strange that they're there and doing the exact same shtick that the other two are doing, where it's almost like it's not needed at all. Because I'm getting that story, I'm getting that fulfillment from Bill and Ted. I don't need Theodora and Billy giving me the same experience, yeah. if you know what I'm saying. But they also, their journey is much more like Bill and Ted's previous adventures, where Bill and Ted are kind of going off on something completely different. They're dealing with like their future selves and stuff like that. It's not a time traveling adventure where they're getting all these historical figures together like they did in the previous two movies. That's Billy and Thea's thing. That's what they're doing. They're taking Bill and Ted's former roles while Bill and Ted are taking on a different role this time. So it's fucking enjoyable, though. It's just what it comes down to.
I know. You know? I'm sad I wasn't able to watch it.
The Thea Billy thing, believe me, it's super minor. I actually watched it twice this week because I did rent this on video on demand. I didn't see it in the theater. I dropped the 20 bones on it, and I had it for 72 hours, I think. So I think I wound up watching it a total of two times. It was on in the background another time, but I really wasn't paying attention. So I think the Billy and Thea thing was only something that I kind of noticed the second time around. I think the first time around it was just a fun breeze of a movie. But one of the things that cracks me up is when they get their mission, they look at their watch and they're like, dude, we got 75 minutes. And I was like, that is the exact amount of runtime left in this movie. So like the movie is happening in real time, essentially. So
that's funny.
It really is. It's asking nothing of you other than just sit down
and have a good time.
Shut your brain off like Bill and Ted and just feel it and just go with it. And there's a couple of cameos that are great too. So
there's a couple good ones later on in the movie.
Yeah. I don't want to spoil, you know, too much of it here. But there's some great cameos, and it's just fucking endearing. So I give it I'm giving it a B+. I fucking loved it. So
sweet.
I'm definitely going to be buying it because I have the other two on Blu-ray. I'm going to want this one. I can see myself wanting to have a Bill and Ted 1, 2, and 3 day. So moving on, Jay, another film that I got to seeing this week was one that I actually had to go to the theaters to see. This one it's just got a crazy history. You know, I mean, it was first Josh Boone, the director, began writing the story and working on this film back in 2014. He was officially signed to the film in 2015 by Fox, and the film was filmed in 3 months over 2017 and was set for a 2018 release.
I think so.
And here we are now, the end of summer of 2020, and we finally have gotten New Mutants. And I was actually excited for it, but I think the tumultuous history of it going into the theater, I was expecting nothing, right? Like, especially from the Fox X-Men property over the past couple of years, you've learned as a fan of comic book films to expect absolutely nothing. And I think that's the best way to go into this movie.
New Mutants are dangerous. That's why you're here.
Ooh, scary.
This isn't a hospital. It's a cage.
Together, we can get out of here.
That thing will kill you!
He's right, it's Mate.
So am I.
The New Mutants.
That was so hot.
Danny Moonstar, or Psych, or Mirage to fans of the comics, is remanded to a secluded mental health hospital after the mysterious destruction of her reservation and the death of her whole family. She is joined by other mutants, Rain Sinclair, Wolfsbane, who has the powers to turn herself into a wolf, Sam Guthrie, Cannonball, who is able to harness pure kinetic energy, allowing him to propel himself at great speeds, and he is mostly indestructible in that state, Ileana Rasputin, or Magic. She is the sister of the X-Men member Colossus. She can teleport herself to her own personal dimension, as well as using armor that covers her right arm and allows her the use of the Soul Sword. And Robert DaCosta, Sunspot. He has the ability to harness the power of the sun. He's essentially the Human Torch without the ability to fly. Together, they will unravel the mysteries surrounding their pasts and the mysterious corporation that is funding their therapy. So essentially, because we're meeting all these characters for the first time, you know, when Danny Moonstone gets there, it's very much just a generic ride, you know, like it's like every other superhero movie. I mean, do you remember the moment in X-Men First Class where they're going around and they're picking everybody up and they're like, cool, what can you do? And they show you. This movie kind of plays with that trope a little bit, because like they're having like a therapy session. They're talking about what everyone can do, but no one really wants to say it. No one wants to mention it. No one wants to. So you have to wait to figure out what they all can do. And Alice Braga, who plays Dr. Reyes here, she's the one who's trying to administer this so-called therapy. And one of the cool things about the film is that it actually delivers on the promise that was made by Josh Boone, in that this movie is dark, both on screen and in subject matter. It feels like a horror movie that was set within the X-Men universe. However, it fails to deliver a compelling story or do much of anything with this premise aside from a few jump scares. So while it has horror elements, it doesn't really steer into that horror movie realm like I think I was kind of hoping that it would, especially with characters like the smiley face men, these 8 foot tall gaunt creatures with long nails and giant rictus grins filled with razor sharp teeth, and they have no eyes. Like, that sounds horrifying, right? Nah, you're going to get a couple jump scares with them. And then there's the demon bear, which is literally like this 30-foot tall, exactly what it sounds like, demon bear. But, you know, it still doesn't deliver quite on that promise of horror, but the horror tones and elements are there. But aside from a good premise, there is very little depth for the audience to sink their teeth into. It is painfully boring at times, and while it tries to elevate itself with an exciting final act, it ultimately falls flat, as there was little tethering you to the story or these characters. Ultimately, this movie is as thin as a runway model purging before Fashion Week. It's not bad, but it's not good either. And that's I think that's like really what this all comes down to.
Are you sure it's not bad?
No, I mean, here's the thing. Like, it's a fine, serviceable movie, right? Like, it's not going to knock your socks off, but you're not going to hate your time with it either. You know,
especially if you enjoy this kind of world.
Right. The boring first half aside, like it's so paint by numbers in the beginning. She meets the people, we learn about the people, but we don't learn enough about them.
It's kind of like the trailer. Right. Had that set up, you know, that exactly. Whole time we saw the trailer, it had that same type of feel. First act, introductory of these people. They don't know where they're at. They don't know.
That's exactly it. I really like the idea of this single setting location, right? Like I do like that idea. But at no point do they really do much of anything with that. You know, you really get good stories out of, I would say, three of the characters, and you kind of get side stories for the other ones where they don't go deep enough. So when their characters, in the third act, ultimately make a decision that seems somewhat out of character for how they've been, it doesn't really hold that much weight because I didn't get to know them that well. So their journey is just there because script demands their journey to take them there, not because their character has demanded it. And that's one of the things. But that's what I mean when I say, like, it's kind of shallow. It's a little hollow. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, they have this place that they're in, but it's not accentuated by them being there at all either, right? It doesn't feel claustrophobic, really. It doesn't feel like they're trapped, even though they show you that they're trapped. You know, I never once feel like the walls closing in. And that's something that can be done more so from the director's standpoint, from Josh Boone's standpoint, than anything you could do in a script. It's all in how you film that. And they really tease you with Dr. Reyes's benefactors and this corporation and stuff like that. And I'm waiting for it to do something more with that. But maybe that's my fault because that's what I've expected from comic book movies, to either give me an end credits scene or to give me a big oh shit moment, you know.
So is that the villain essentially? It's like the place, you know.
Kind of.
Okay.
I'll say this: it's a little bit more nuanced than good guy punches bad guy, and that's to its service that it's a little bit more nuanced than that. There is a little bit of depth there as far as that goes. There is no mustache twirling villain per se. While there is bad guys and good guys, it's far more gray.
I'm fine with that.
Yeah, but I mean, really what this comes down to is New Mutants has a lot to offer on paper, but thanks to its boring and telegraphed first half, the second half has a lot of ground to make up, but ultimately it falls short, about as short as I do in every picture I've ever taken with Jay.
This is true. Okay.
If I had to score it, man, it's a C+. It's fine. Yeah. It's fine. Okay. It's meh. It's meh. Don't go to the theaters to see it though, you know?
Yeah.
It'll be on Disney Plus or it'll be on Hulu and it'll be free soon enough.
All right. Well, follow up question about that, kind of related to the theater experience. So like how was the effects? How was it? Like, was there any kind of sequences that was pretty cool or was it cheap looking?
The entire second act is all action. It's all action. Like it moves at a quick pace, but it takes halfway through the movie for that story to get started. Mm. And then they hit you with this revelation.
Were the effects fun to watch? The effects were fine.
No, they were good.
Oh, yeah, okay. They were good. Okay. All right.
I mean, you know, very clearly CGI may break the uncanny valley here or there, but sure, for the most part, they were good. They were serviceable. I mean, there was nothing, no issue with them. At no point was I taken out of the experience through bad visual effects. So
okay,
they put their time and their polish into it. But I just can't help but feeling like with the premise that they had set up, you know, these kids locked in this place, it's almost like the Breakfast Club meets, you know, a Stephen King story almost, you know. It just never delivered on that promise, even though it's all there. It's all there. All the elements that they said was going to be there, that Josh Boone said he would have, they're there. Some of its parts never come together in any type of way that make you walk out and go like, that was pretty damn cool.
Hmm.
Okay. The only thing you're going to say when you walk out is meh. You know, I see some people tearing this movie apart for lots of little things. But I mean, ultimately, it was just meant to be a fun one-off to the X-Men series that was put into production long before Disney acquired Fox. So
you said one-off. You do think that this was meant to be a one-off?
This is no. Well, I think Fox may have had future plans for these characters.
Correct.
Whether there would be a New Mutants 2 or not, I don't know.
I mean, we know that this is a one-off now. But when this is a one-off now. Does it feel like it could have been spun off into sequels?
You know, it was very clear that there was meant to be a hook at the end of it. You know, there was going to be an end credit scene, but Josh Boone said that he did have to scrap the end credit scene because it implied a sequel or a continuation of this story. So instead, what he did have was the original New Mutants artist come in and draw all of these characters as their X-Men New Mutants counterparts. So Anya Taylor-Joy looking like Magic did from the comics. He came in and drew it all, which was pretty cool. You know, it's pretty mm-hmm. cool. I always liked the New Mutants in the comics, so I was intrigued by this. I liked where they had planned on taking it. And if you told me that Disney was going to be like, you know what, we are going to greenlight a sequel, I would actually be down for it. I don't know if I'd want Josh Boone to take another crack at it, but I liked what I saw enough that I'd be willing to give it a second chance.
All right.
Another chance for someone else to pick it up and do it. We know that that's not going to happen because there's too much in this film that implies the larger X universe out there that no longer exists. So
yeah, let's not get into that again.
Right, exactly. So it's fine. Just wait till it comes to video on demand. You'll be much better off saving your $20. All right, Jay, that's going to do it for the reviews that I had this week. Next, we got our big review, man. We got to get into Tenet. All right, Jay, Tenet. You and I, you actually, because you're an A-list member, you got me into an early showing of Tenet on August 31st instead of the release date of September 4th. And it was a completely empty theater. I know.
Pretty much. It was definitely, I would say, less than 25% even.
For sure.
I mean, it was significant. Now, granted, people, we were not in an IMAX or Dolby. They were all sold out. I guess that's where everybody was at.
We were at
one of the larger theater rooms, but it was like the old school traditional digital, theater. It wasn't anything too
and
fancy.
No power reclining seat, which pissed me off. But anyway, ultimately, the experience wasn't bad. I wasn't near anybody like I was the last time I was at the theaters to see Train to Busan. There was no one near me, so I felt comfortable at least at the very least. I'm not going to make it a habit of going to the theaters though. Maybe for something like this, something like Tenet. But if I can avoid it, I'm going to avoid it as best as I can, because it's just the recycled air that gets me. Like I could be distant from everybody as much as I want, but still, people coughing in another theater, it gets sucked up through the air vents and comes blowing right down on me.
So. Yeah, and apparently they have air purifiers in there.
Bullshit.
Just saying.
Bullshit. Just saying. So let's get into Tenet proper, because there's a lot to discuss here.
Oh, yeah.
Don't touch them.
What the hell happened here?
Hasn't happened yet.
As I understand it, we're trying to prevent World War III.
Nuclear holocaust?
No. Something worse.
How would you like to die? Old. You chose the wrong profession.
We are being attacked by the future.
Time isn't the problem. Getting out alive, that's the problem. Been first, so much turf, I'm out of line. I put in work, I draw the line and cross it first.
I need the time, I need the money, make it worse. All right, so Tenet follows the protagonist, played by John David Washington, as he is brought into an underground organization known as Tenet. He is set with the task of locating the pieces of the algorithm so that he can prevent future scientists from sending objects back through time that will ultimately be our doom in the past, and thus unraveling time and existence as we know it.
Mm.
And it's
on that for a second.
It's not quite as complicated as even that sounds. My big issue with this movie is has nothing to do with the script. It has absolutely nothing to do with the plot either. My big problem with it is there is so much technical going on in this movie.
This movie's all about plot though, Dave. I mean, this is a plot movie.
From the fight scenes being filmed in reverse to all new sound design from Christopher Nolan with an all new editor. My big problem with this movie was that I didn't hear one fucking ounce of dialogue throughout the film's runtime practically.
Yes.
If there was anything going on remotely action-based, whether it's gunfire, whether it's an explosion, and it's a Christopher Nolan movie, so there's plenty of all of that. Whether it's a plane crashing into a fucking building at 10 miles an hour. That's right, 10 miles an hour. Far less spectacular than you may have thought. True. That I couldn't hear a word that was being said. The score alone was even drowning out the sounds of explosions. And I had some similar problems with things in Dunkirk, but what Dunkirk had going for it was that there was practically no dialogue, so anything you missed really didn't matter all that much. Here,
this is true.
In a plot-heavy movie, everything that's said, especially when it involves time travel, will come back later on in the plot, and it will be important. So the fact that I couldn't hear most of that winds up being an extreme detriment to the movie, and I was worried that it was the theater that we were in. But I did talk to other people who have seen this movie, and they all had the exact same problem.
Yes, I've been hearing this.
Word one of dialogue.
Pretty much with every single review, and I believe this may be the last time you'll see something like this from Christopher Nolan, because this is going to be the main blowback from this film. Because
I think so.
How can you... It was so frustrating, Dave. I mean, it was very jarring. It was very noticeable. And it does get to the point where people will be complaining. And that's not just us. I'm talking casual moviegoers are going to really be frustrated with this film.
I bet you I would love this movie if I just read its script. I bet you I would love it. I think I really would.
I think you would.
But Christopher Nolan expertly weaves plot points together like a tapestry. But thanks to his penchant for innovation and uniqueness in filmmaking, the bigger picture becomes lost. And I really think, like, while watching this movie, I kept thinking of Dr. Ian Malcolm in Jurassic Park, where he was so preoccupied about whether he could, he never stopped to ask himself whether he should.
That is one big pile of shit.
where I talked about Bill and Ted, where it was so earnest in its delivery, where it's just like it wore everything it was right on its sleeve.
Yeah.
I feel like Tenet had nothing earnest about it whatsoever.
Absolutely the opposite. Yeah.
It honestly felt kind of pompous in a way. It kind of felt like Nolan is now a little bit too full of himself. He's been, you know, he's high on his own farts at this point.
Love the gas. Love it.
This is why we're here. This is why we're here.
Well, I think he's trying to get too creative for his own good, and not just for his own good, but also for the detriment, really, for the actual movie goer to enjoy the movie as a whole while you're watching the experience.
I think so, too. I mean, another big problem that I had throughout the movie, which I'm going to put down to another technical issue, is just the pacing of the first half of this movie. You know, John David Washington is in Mumbai. Now he's in London. Now he's in Kiev. Now he's he's in all these different locations. And each scene in each location is taking up 2 to 5 minutes of runtime. So everything that's going on is happening at such a pace that you can't get your bearings for time at all.
There's no exposition for location jumping, because it's a hard cut into a new location for whatever reason that they're there.
Now, I understand that that's purposeful, probably, on Nolan's part, so that way there's not too many plot holes when we get to the end and all this stuff starts to come together, you know? But the problem is, it takes you so long to get your bearings in the film. By the time you're getting there at the car chase, which we've all seen in the trailer,
which is pretty much the middle of the movie,
I looked at my watch and I was like, huh, this movie started at 7. It's only 8:15. How much longer do I have to sit here? I was ready to be done. I was ready for the climax of the film to happen at the end of that car chase and for me to go home and try and digest everything that I just watched. And
sure,
I think you and I found out while standing outside discussing the film afterwards, this film is far more fun to talk about than it was to watch.
Yes. And that was one of the things that I came about realizing after we parted ways, was the best part of this movie was you and I outside talking about this movie.
Yeah, and I appreciate
movies that do that. However, you still have to enjoy yourself while watching the movie. It doesn't have to always come together at the very last chapter of the film to come together. Inception, you know, there are other movies of Christopher Nolan that has similar setups like that, where it does all pay off and come together towards the end. But you are able to follow the movie while you're watching the movie and enjoy yourself. It's hard to do that throughout Tenet. It's really hard. And on top of that, Dave, the action scenes were nothing special. And that was so frustrating, because this is Christopher Nolan and you're used to seeing and expecting something spectacular. And some things were pretty interesting and cool to see. But, and no green screen, this is all in camera practical effects. But even still, nothing really blew you away.
No, no. I mean, when you tell me you're going to crash a plane, but then you do it at 10 miles an hour, you're really not giving me anything spectacular. I think I saw that in Passenger 57 or some other movie that involved an airplane. And I didn't care, Con Air did it fantastically. You want to crash a plane. That's how you crash a plane on screen. But I mean, me and you talked about this in comparison to Inception. Inception gave us this thing where, you know, Ellen Page was new to it all, and their exposition dumps to her made sense because they're training her and they're showing her how this world works at the same time we're learning about it. But in Tenet, because it's so clandestine, because everything's so secret, John David Washington's only getting pieces of the information, and we as the audience are only being given pieces of that information, and none of it really comes together until the end. So you're left spinning your wheels and trying to spend a lot of your time throughout the runtime of this movie, instead of possibly enjoying what's going on, you're thinking about what's going on a little bit too much.
That's the frustrating thing. You understand why they're doing that, the whole point of the movie, but at the same time, it's like, well, I understand why, but it still didn't make that whole previous 45 minutes or so enjoyable for me to get to this point. You know, and was the payoff worth it? Not so much.
I already know the frustrating thing. My big problem right now is when I was reading other people's early reviews on Twitter after I had kind of like written up the notes on my own, was there was already people saying, like, the people who don't like it just don't get it. And it's like, no, this is not a hard plot to follow. It explains itself pretty well. By the time you get to the end of the movie, it all makes sense. Mm-hmm. It does. And it doesn't bog itself down in too much scientific jargon. You know, how do objects move backwards through time? A special type of radiation. Care to explain how that works? Not really. Fine by me.
Yes, science, bitch.
So it's not difficult to wrap your head around. It's not.
You just have to let things go and just go exactly. with it.
Yeah. And it's fine. And that's fine. My problem is just with the technical aspect of the way this film was put together. That's just the fact that I couldn't get my bearings in the beginning. I didn't understand what was going on. It never once took a minute for me to settle into the main character, even though I love John David Washington and his role here. I think
all the acting was good to fine. Because I would say I'm a little iffy on a couple of the other supporting roles, but I think Robert Pattinson and John David Washington were fantastic in their roles. I think they did a good job and had good chemistry. Yeah.
But I wasn't crazy about Kat, who's played by Elizabeth Debicki. She was fine. You know, it was whatever. She had her role. But really, it's her role that I wanted to like more. Here's literally a battered woman taking back her freedom, essentially. Taking back, you know, a part of herself that she lost to this evil man who's played by Kenneth Branagh, Andre Sator, who is the main villain. You know, I wanted to root for her more, but instead I wound up not liking her. And I don't have a good answer for why. So I'm putting that down to performance. But Kenneth Branagh, I thought he was far too over the top. He was hot and cold.
He was on the line for me. He was on the line. I definitely didn't like it, but I didn't hate it either. But one of the things that just, again, stood out was like an actor like Aaron Taylor Johnson making a surprise late showing. It's not a surprise, really. It's not a spoiler or anything like that. But he is in this movie, and he comes in later. But there's no real meat to chew on for him to even play with.
Right.
And even still, his whatever dialect that he's using, I think it's like a rough and, you know, like a rough part of London, like a real rough British kind of accent. It's heavy.
It's a little cockney.
Yeah, it's a little cockney. It's very militant. It's hard to kind of understand as well. Again,
it's hard to understand because everything around them is so loud. They're on a ship, exactly. So you can barely hear what they're saying. They're preparing for a battle, and there's explosions going around, so you can barely hear what he's saying.
Sure.
And a lot of that exposition dump that we're waiting for to get a bit of an explanation on what's going on comes from him. And most of his scenes, you can't hear what the dude is saying. Look, ultimately, I like the premise of this movie. I think there was a lot there for people to enjoy. I just think ultimately, I think it's a film that's far more fun to discuss and to dissect as far as the inversion and time travel works than
it is. Which does raise my grade, Dave. I give it credit for that because I do enjoy movies that do that, and I give them credit for that. However, you know, like,
all right, well, what, my grade would affect.
I'm going to give it a C plus.
All right.
I'm going to give it a C plus.
I'm at a C minus. My wife asked me which one I enjoyed more, whether I liked New Mutants or Tenet more. And it's like, huh, I think I enjoyed the story and everything that I was getting from Tenet more than New Mutants. However, New Mutants felt more digestible to me. Now, obviously, these are apples and oranges.
You are a sad, strange little man, and you have my pity.
But I think I had a better time shutting my brain off and watching New Mutants. And I got to say, I mean, the hero of the week for me is just Bill and Ted. That saved my week.
Now, for me, like, while watching this movie, it was a C-. And after the fact of, like, talking with you about it and really marinating with it, and also kind of giving myself, you know, I'm watching this film in IMAX this coming weekend again. I do think that there are some things that I will probably understand and enjoy more while watching it a second time. So I'm giving myself the benefit of the doubt of giving that score a C plus. And I think I'm pretty sure it will not go any higher than that. But even still, I'm okay with that.
I'm going to watch it again when it comes to video on demand, because I'm hoping that when it gets reformatted for my screen, they also go back in and they fix the sound. So that way when I watch it at home, I might have a better chance of hearing the dialogue, which is ultimately like my big thing that I took away from this is I fucking hated the editing.
It's really bad.
Fucking hated the sound design.
Yeah.
But Jay, let's dissect this a little bit. Let's get into a little bit of the conversation you and I were having after the film. Let's get into our spoilers.
Spoiler warning. Spoiler warning. Spoiler warning.
All right, so obviously we never get a name for John David Washington. He's only ever referred to as the protagonist. But I kind of like that in a way, where, you know, I don't think I even realized that we didn't quite get a name for him until the end of the movie when, I mean, again, this is the spoiler section, so you should have got out here when you find out that he is the creator of Tenet. Like, he is the guy who goes on to start the entire organization.
Yeah.
And he actually had to send someone back through time to recruit himself so that he created it.
Multiple people, really. I mean, there's pawns throughout this whole movie that you realize at the very end was orchestrated from him.
Exactly.
So from the future,
Robert Pattinson's character of Neil comes back through time, and it's something that's completely innocuous. But when they sit down to have drinks for the first time, you know, he tells him that he always drinks on the job, and he tells him that he prefers. The protagonist tells Neil, "I prefer soda water." He goes, "No, you don't. You prefer Diet Coke." And it turns out to be right, because at the end of the film, we find out that Neil is the protege of the protagonist in the future who was sent back through time. Now, I heard a couple theories that Neil is actually Kat's son, but I was wondering about this, right? They can send objects back through time because objects really don't change. You know, you send a bullet back through time, an inverted bullet really doesn't change. But what happens when you send a person back through time? Because the way time travel works in this, it's not like blip, you're there. You know, you travel backwards through time at the same rate of speed that you were traveling forwards through time. Your perception of time is the length of it stays exactly the same. So how did Robert Pattinson go from wherever he was in the future, where it's pretty much implied that John David Washington's the protagonist, was much older and pretty much on his last mission? They kind of imply that he's dead, essentially. They sent him back through time, but he didn't age at all. He stayed the same age he was in the future, which is weird, right? At what age was Neil when he was sent back through time? What age was the protagonist when he sent back through time? Now, it's obviously possible, but that's something I was thinking about. Like, shouldn't Neil come back? And since he's still experiencing time in reverse in the same way, his body would still feel the effects of time, wouldn't it? I don't know. But that's something interesting I was thinking about.
That's a good point. And one of those things that's just not answered about this movie.
Right.
But
for all we know, Neil was sent back through time 5 years, which wouldn't have much of a difference on his.
Sure.
And John David Washington's the protagonist is having his last mission 5 years from the day that
even
they're attacking.
10 years, you know,
it's 10 years. Right.
Yeah.
It's doable. It's not a plot hole. It doesn't break
a
the plot.
A whole lot can happen in 10 years.
Right. It doesn't break the plot at all. But anyway, that's one of the things that like I do find that stuff interesting.
That's the kind of stuff, Dave, that I'm looking forward to my second viewing with this movie is like little things like that to kind of marinate with.
I also love the philosophical question throughout it because they talk about the grandfather paradox a ton of times, right? If you go back in time and you kill your grandfather,
mm-hmm.
then you would thus negate your existence, except if you didn't exist, you couldn't have ever gone back in time to kill your grandfather. So therefore...
What the hell have you done, Fry? Relax. She can't be my grandmother. I figured it all out. Of course she's your grandmother, you perverted dope. Look!
Come back to bed, dear.
It's impossible. I mean, if she's my grandmother, who's my grandfather? Isn't it obvious? You are!
And they talk about this throughout the movie. Robert Pattinson's character always says, whatever happened, happened. You can't change that. It's already happened. You can only observe it.
Right.
But John David Washington's character, the protagonist, said, but what if we can? What if we can change it? But by the ending of this film, what they proved was that the grandfather paradox is a bunch of bullshit because whatever happened, happened. Despite John David Washington's character trying to change the future, he never changed a goddamn thing. It always just happened the way it happened. Try as he might, no matter what, it all happened the way it happened.
Yeah. Yeah.
So which is a very nihilistic view of it, right? Because a lot of like we as Americans, we like to believe that you can work hard, you can persevere, you can do anything if you set your mind to it. But it turns out you can't change time. Even when you have the ability to time travel, whatever happened, happened. It's so like no matter what, the future who sends the algorithm back through time, who sends these objects back through time to destroy the past, will always exist and that will always happen. No matter what. You can't stop the future from trying to destroy the past.
Which is interesting to think about.
Exactly. You know? So it's almost as if Tenet's existence is almost pointless because no matter what, that will still be the outcome. Now, them from the future, shouldn't they know that whatever happens, happens? And therefore, you should know that you can't destroy the past because
exist. Is it their cause to make sure that does stay that way?
I have no clue. I have no clue.
You know,
but it's interesting to think about.
To prevent anything from someone tampering with it. I don't know.
This is almost like a war of nothing. It's two opposing sides, Tenet and the future, fighting against
hence
each other.
The title, you know,
right?
Backwards,
right.
Well, forward, same thing.
Exactly. You know, the title is a palindrome. So
palindrome. It's irrelevant.
Right, exactly. It's all irrelevant by the end. They're fighting each other,
yeah.
But no matter what, the future should know that the past can't change the future.
Yeah.
I suggest you let that one marinate.
It's very strange. But we get
it
that
is strange.
We get that with Kenneth Branagh as well, because he is the representation of the nihilistic future's viewpoints. He's the guy who has collected all 9 pieces of the algorithm, which have been sent back through time. And when they are all put together, he can essentially unmake the world. And by what he would do is with the algorithm there, he can set the world's time to run in reverse permanently until it's completely unmade. And it's all set to his heartbeat monitor, his health monitor, like basically his Fitbit. And if his heart ever stops, the algorithm will go off, time will reverse, and everything will be unmade. Not just Earth, all of the universe, essentially, will be completely unmade until time didn't exist. Because we don't know when time started or when time will end. We don't even know what makes time. Time is something that we experience as linear, but we don't even know if there's any type of matter that makes up time. So, but he would essentially die and completely undo time. And he is that nihilistic view that the future has. If he can't have the world, then no one can. And they say that throughout the film.
Right.
Which is something that I can kind of relate to in a way, but it's so super villainy that it kind of rubbed me the wrong way throughout the film, where I was like, this guy is such a Bond villain. You know, he's such a mustache twirling bad guy. There's almost no redeeming quality about him whatsoever.
Oh yeah, without a doubt, nothing. Absolutely
they,
nothing.
They don't even give him like a touching moment with his son, where I could be like, you know what? He wants to undo all of space and time, but you know, he also really loves his kid. He says how much he loves his child, but at no point in it am I really like, man, what a good dad he is. You know, I kind of wish like they fit that in there, that he's like a really good dad on top of being like an international arms dealer and just about the worst person to ever exist in all of history. But he's a really good dad. You know? like would we hate Hitler as much if he had children and we saw pictures of him, like, I don't know, playing ball in the backyard with his kid? And I don't know, you know, maybe not. Maybe not. But those are just a few of like the interesting things that I thought, you know, I really liked the way that they tied Kat's story up, where, you know, Kat figures out when Kenneth Branagh's Sator was going to kill himself, because it was a time where he disappeared when they were on vacation in Vietnam, and she saw a woman jump off the boat, and she thought that he disappeared because he was cheating on her and the woman was his mistress. So when she gets on the boat, though, you know, Kevin Brown is not anywhere to be found. He does eventually show up, but essentially that's Sator moving through time showing up, not the original Sator who essentially killed himself then. But what we find out is he didn't actually kill himself. The whole mission happened, and she is the one who killed him, and she was the one who jumped off and jumped off the boat.
Right.
Now, I like the way that that all ties up, but there's a scene earlier on, Jay, when Michael Caine and the protagonist are sitting down and they're having a conversation. Michael Caine mentions that Sator's facility was attacked and that his operation has been shut down. And that happens in the first half hour of the movie. So essentially, the ending of the movie is spoiled in the first half of the half hour of the movie.
Yeah.
I suggest you let that one marinate.
Which I thought was crazy. You know, I didn't think about it then. I only thought about it afterwards, but I was like, it was just such a throwaway line. But like, everything in the beginning is so throwaway, and it only has meaning towards the end. Oh, yeah,
it doesn't come together at all.
So
until the very end.
It's like, I love this idea of like inversion and how the script plays with it. I love the idea of the inversion pincer movement, right? Like the people who attacked Sator's facility who were dressed in blue are moving backwards through time. So essentially the red team already knows what happens because the blue team has done it and is now moving backwards through time. So essentially they closed in on them in a pincer movement, which I liked. And I like the use of red and blue, which, is a theme throughout it. Anything that's inverted is blue. Anything that's traveling forward through time is red. And they have these big machines that invert things. And we get a moment during the plane crash and during the art heist, which, again, there's like 10 heists in this movie. I mean, everything's a heist. They're stealing something from someone at some point in every single location that they go to. But we learn that the protagonist, if he comes in contact with himself, he would essentially undo his own existence. But we find out that he did come in contact with himself during the art heist. And that's the moment I realized that they were eventually going to go forward to a certain point in this plot before they started moving backwards, because we get the part where Robert Pattinson chases a masked man down a hallway. He comes back holding the mask and running away. And when the protagonist asks him what happened to him, he just says, "Oh, I took care of it. Don't worry about it."
Yeah.
And they just kind of let that go. And that's the moment that I was like, He just unmasked John David Washington. And it's John David Washington moving backwards through time. I know it is.
I knew something was up. I didn't know exactly what or who, but it did stick with me. There were a lot of moments throughout the movie where you could tell something was a little off. Like you could just tell, and something was going to come and piece its way back together towards the end, and it did. So it wasn't terribly unnoticeable. those things were going to be out there, and you could just kind of keep it in the back of your mind, and it would come together towards the end.
Yeah. So I think, talking about it now with you and with all of you, I like talking about this movie. I like the idea. I like the themes. I like this stuff, man.
It's just
it was just presented
pretty much it. Exactly. It's presented not in an enjoyable way during your theater experience, and the
it was
quality
just piss poor.
Just wasn't there. That's another problem thing, with the film itself. It's just, to get to the point towards the end and watch the pieces come together, the puzzle pieces or connecting the dots or whatever you want to call it, and at the very end and the closure. And you can see, one of my favorite things was that departure scene with the Robert Pattinson and John David Washington.
Oh, I love that moment. I love the ending.
He's slowly walking away and kind of smiling and explaining it to John David Washington and slash us, little bits of other things within the story and him and how he is,
right.
Who he is and how he is. They're very good friends, and he's going to stick with it, and he's going to continue on. And
it's the protagonist's first mission with Neil.
Yeah,
it's the protagonist's first mission with Neil, but for Neil, it's his last mission with the protagonist.
Exactly,
because he's going to continue moving forward through time at this point, or no, he's going to continue moving backwards through time, fulfilling whatever mission was given to him by the protagonist in the beginning.
Right. Right
before John David Washington was recruited by essentially himself.
John David Washington knows that he's going to die, and he saw him die at that. Which I think I still need understanding about.
It was
that.
Neil. Neil.
It was Neil
who
was the guy who died while they were fighting for the paradigm.
The algorithm. While they're fighting over the nine pieces of the algorithm.
Yeah, fighting over the algorithm, and they're cutting back and forth, fighting with the guy, and then they cut to the little jewel dangling from his backpack or his,
the pendant. The soldier that is there is Robert Pattinson's Neil, and he is dead. So he has to get there. So he gets to that moment to essentially unlock the cage so that they can get the algorithm from Sator's soldier.
Yeah.
But essentially, there's basically two Neils there at the same time. Just one's dead.
Right.
And
which I still don't understand. Completely.
Because whatever's happened, happened. happened. So
that's one thing that I need to look into again when I watch it again the second time.
But it's this entire movie is the snake eating its own tail. Like when does it end? Because the end is the beginning is the end and stuff. Even in the beginning of the movie, when they're going for what they call Artifact 241, which is really the ninth piece of the algorithm, they're going after that. But by the end, they're at a moment that is before that, and there are all the pieces of the algorithm. So one piece is going to have to go missing and wind up there. In the locker 241 so that they can go get it to start this whole thing over again.
So Dave, overall, like this movie, there are things to, enjoy and respect of. It's just that, it's mainly, like you said, it is the story and script of itself. Like, this would be a more interesting read than it would be so much a visual spectacle or a movie going experience.
I think it's too full of itself.
It just does not translate in a movie going environment. It really just does not. And it's just one of those unfortunate things. And I do believe this is on the bottom tier for sure for Christopher Nolan's filmography.
You know I don't like Memento all that much. I know that pisses people off every time I say it. I don't like Memento all that much. I'm not wowed by Memento. I think it's fine. It's okay. Mm-hmm. I like Memento more than this. Which I guess
That's saying something.
It's saying something. I mean, I really that my only interest in going back to this movie again is to understand it more, but I can't take away the flaws that I have with it.
I guarantee you this second time in IMAX watching this will probably be the last time watching this movie. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think... Yeah. I have no interest in going back other than to maybe get a deeper understanding of the story and then maybe have a better, more informed discussion about it in the future.
Sure.
Just so I can explain why I dislike it more.
We're going to be discussing this movie with friends, you know, under, you know, a bonfire one day down the line.
Right. And I'm going to have to explain why I hate it.
Right. Exactly. And I want to, you know, we need to know what the hell we're talking about.
This is going to be like one of those things where it's like, there's going to be a small section of people who really, really enjoy this movie. And they're going to be a very loud, vocal minority. But for the rest of us, it is what it is. What's happened. And we're going to forget it and we're going to move on to hopefully better films. But there's going to be that section of people that like this more. Because I feel like that's always been me with Interstellar. Like, I really enjoy Interstellar. It's up there for me with Inception. I think Inception like edges it out a little bit. But I really enjoy Interstellar. But when I talk to other people about it, other people are like, it was fine. Yeah, it's okay. I mean, it's nothing great. And I'm like, man, I really dig Interstellar. But
I also think that those are the people that did not give it multiple viewings.
Yeah, I mean,
I think that does come back stronger with multiple viewings.
I don't see this being that movie. I don't see this. Well, I don't see me going back and watching this again.
We'll see. Yeah.
Like Dunkirk, I really enjoy. You know, I enjoy Dunkirk. It's definitely low on my Nolan list. But
yeah, I'm not a fan.
I enjoy Dunkirk a fair bit, but
it's one of those classic. It's very much like this movie, to be honest. It's a lot to respect, but also as a viewing experience, it was dull and flat and a lot of times throughout this movie. So throughout Dunkirk, along with. You know, Tenet as well. So, you know, that's something that he's going to have to really kind of chew on. And I think, you know, him getting an original film with this kind of budget and freedom to do whatever the fuck he wants, I don't think that's going to happen again. Because I do believe this movie is going to have quite a bit of blowback and not good word of mouth. Now, there are going to be some repeat viewings, obviously, a la me, who wants to go back and rewatch it, but I have the freedom of the A-list pass, you know? So,
right.
But I don't know. I really just can't see this movie making a terrible amount of money.
Well, I'm going to end it here. We're going to be back next week with reviews for Mulan and for The Boys Season 2. Jay will fill us in on whether he enjoyed Tenet more the second time around. But I want to thank all of you guys for listening. If you're enjoying the show, please consider leaving us a 5-star review on the podcast listening app of your choice. If you're really enjoying the show, you can support us monetarily. You can head over to our Patreon page, and there you can, for just $1 a month, you can get all the additional content we put on there. If you disagree with any of our reviews that we gave tonight, especially for Tenet, or you want to have a discussion on Tenet, you can reach out to us on Twitter. I'm at SuperMoviePod.
I am at J_SMB on Twitter, and also Facebook, Super Movie Bros Podcast, and on Instagram, Super Movie Bros.
So that's going to do it for this week. Thanks for listening, everyone. Have a great one. Cheers.